Hello, and welcome to my podcast, John Scott Lawton's English You Know. This continues my audiobook, Forever in Florence, and in this fourth episode, we cover chapters 19, 21, and 23, involving the life of Isabella, modern-day resident of Florence, as she is about to start her new job at the Academy Galleria, and the even numbers, 20, 22, and 24, go back in time 500 years to the Renaissance, where we explore the life of Michelangelo Buonarroti through the eyes of his friend Francesca. After a few days of launch, there should be a transcript appears on the Spotify and other platforms, podcast platforms, which enable you to follow the story as you listen to it, if you prefer. If you would like a transcript, a written transcript of the story, please email me at johnscottlawton@hotmail.co.uk and I will send you the chapters so far. If you have any questions related to English language learning or to this podcast series in general, please contact me again via email or through LinkedIn, where you'll see my profile described in the podcast description. Thank you very much indeed. Chapter 19. Isabella was addicted to Bob. His words, his music, his fine art and his poetry were the soundtrack, recitation and film score of her life. At every turn he had been there for her, in sound and in virtual form. She had seen him live countless times. Well, not really countless. She could remember every gig, every event, every opportunity to be near him. Now she was going to be with him. In the same room, in touching distance, in breathing distance. "Are you sure, Mia?" she pleaded. "You're not making this up, are you?" "Of course it's true. I've been working on it for ages. That's what I was really doing in Rome last weekend, plotting and planning. I met the agents and producers who are putting on the Milan event, and it's all agreed. I've got the pre-concert interview. We've got to be there, backstage, in the green room, for 6 p.m. Isabella wiped yet more tears from her eyes as the emotions again became too much for her to hold to herself. "You don't know what this means to me," said Isabella. "Of course I do, which is why I've set it up. It helps to have my surname. People think I'm somehow related. I wonder if I am." Isabella took another long sip of the drink that Mia had just provided to calm her nerves. That was easier said than done, as her hands were shaking and the glass rattled against the ring of her finger, the one with the Florentine lilies, which was so important to her. "Thank you, darling, thank you. I don't know what else to say. Won't they think it's strange having two people in on the interview?" "I'll just tell them you're my producer or editor or something. It will be fine," replied Mia. "Darling, I've got to be going. I've got an early start in the morning. Some big new exhibition is coming in and I've got to supervise the delivery. They're starting at 6 a.m. "Okay, let me pay it and I'll phone you tomorrow lunchtime." The pair hugged each other tightly as Mia got up to go. Isabella's legs were not working properly at that moment, so she quickly sat back down to gather her thoughts and her senses as Mia disappeared in the direction of home. After some considerable time, Isabel felt that she could move and steadied herself with the arms of the chair as she got up. Her head was spinning and she was in a state of euphoria that felt as though she was high on something. She was. Joy. Rosa and Luna were there to greet her at home, frantic because they had been left for the best part of the day. She let them out into the garden initially, then gathered their leads for a late evening walk by the still river. There were so many tourists out that she felt perfectly safe to do so, and she needed the fresh air and the spirit of the water to further calm her nerves. She breathed in the ozone coming off the water as it gently splashed against the riverbank. Every sense was working overtime. The air was warm at every inhale, the grass sharp and slightly wet to the touch as the evening humidity kicked in. She could hear the noise of families settling down for the night, and a cacophony of musical sounds playing in every direction, bouncing off the walls of the narrow streets and alleyways as she made her way back up from the riverside towards home. Passing one window, she stopped as she heard the opening beats of something very familiar to her. Whoever lived here obviously had impeccable taste. Here was the universe acting in harmony with her spirit and soul, bringing to her everything that she could feel and experience in that moment, helping her make sense of the truth. All through the summers into January, I'd been visiting morgues and monasteries, looking for the necessary body parts, limbs and livers and brains and hearts. I'll bring someone to life. It's what I want to do. I want to create my own version of you. Well, it must be the winter of my discontent. I wish you'd take me with you wherever you went. They talk all night and they talk all day. Not for a minute do I believe anything they say. I'm going to bring someone to life, someone I've never seen. You know what I mean? You know exactly what I mean. At that moment, Isabella expressed her gratitude to the greater being for all the blessings she or he had bestowed on her that day, indeed, throughout her life. The chance to share her life with Dylan through his words, his art, his music, his films, was not just a coincidence. She was meant to live alongside him, to share her years with him. Now she would share her breathing space with him, to look into his eyes and to hear his voice, naturally and in close proximity. Sleep did not come easily, even after a long cooling shower. Her mind was racing and her heart was pumping. She wrestled with the bedsheets and fought with the pillows, but her whole body was energized and full of excitement and electricity. Eventually, she did sleep, but only to dream, inevitably, of being with Bob. Shaking his hand as they entered the smart lounge where the interview was to take place, touching his hand. She held his fingers, those fingers that had strummed the guitar that played to her soul, the fingers that created majestic artwork, in which every stroke of every brush she had held she could trace and memorize. Those fingers that had held the pen or banged on the typewriter keys to craft her life story. Those fingers. Those fingers. She felt those same fingers touch her skin, embrace her and hold her, massage her and caress her. A loving and gentle touch, wise in movement and soft in motion. Sleep was not sleep. It was a bliss of dreaming and fantasy, a night of pure enchantment, and blessed release of a lifetime of shared love and affection. Chapter 20. Reaching home, the dogs were pleased to see her, of course, and demanded their afternoon stroll. "It's too hot for you, my darlings. You'll just have to wait until the evening, when it's a bit cooler. Then we can go out together," Francesca advised her beloved pets. The stress of caring for Michelangelo in his hideaway and the need to behave secretively at work and in her social affairs were beginning to weigh heavily on Francesca's soul, mind and body. She needed to rest and went into her inner room away from the glare of the bright afternoon sun and lay on a soft cushioned couch against a cool wall that didn't receive the sun's attentions. Here she lay, initially with an intention to read, but this was soon overcome by a desire to close her eyes and sleep. She descended into a deep, restful sleep almost immediately and found herself again in her dream state, walking by the river with the dogs and a strong, well-built man with dark hair. She couldn't decide whether this figure was Michelangelo's David in human form, or Antonio, who she had just met again that day for the first time in many months. He had the figure of David, obviously of reduced size, but of equal posture and strength. There were certainly some admirable qualities about him. She found herself standing at the water's edge, then walking into the water until it reached the top of her legs. David, or Antonio, was watching her closely from the river bank as she turned, hands on hips, just below the waterline, and she gave him a beaming smile of admiration and delight. She herself was beauty personified at this moment, alluring and captivating, her smile radiant as her white teeth glistened in the afternoon sun. "Be safe," the male figure cried out, as she allowed herself to be embraced by the cold water, enveloped in its freshness and rejuvenating energies. "There are strong currents there. You must be careful." Ignoring the man's cries, she moved out further into the river and bent her whole body and then her head below the water and attempted to swim. She could only hear the faintest ripple of the ebbing currents around her and see the release of air pockets from her billowing clothes. Dull cries could again be heard from the river bank, which she again disregarded. The strong currents of the water now had her in their grip, and they were taking her further down into the black waters and out into the middle of the river. She knew she was drowning, but she was strangely calm, as if resigned to her fate. She felt near death, and yet there was a serenity to the moments she was experiencing with all her senses. A splashing noise could be heard from the bank, and a man's strong arms then grabbed her roughly from the waters. She could feel the water ebbing on her face, and felt what she thought was the man's hand across her mouth. Francesca awoke to realise it was Luna licking her face with her wet tongue. Rosa encamped behind her knees as she lay prone on the sofa.
Okay, I'm getting up. There's no need to try to eat me.
It had been such a restful sleep, if not the most pleasant of dreams, and she sat up to try to remember details of the dream so that she could establish its meaning. She surmised that it was something to do with her emotions, feeling overwhelmed. The worries about Michelangelo and how to keep him safe. The daily trauma of working under intolerable conditions in the Medici court. And worries over her father's health. There had been the rescue, though, from David or Antonio. The fact that they would not let her die in the river. That they were both caring for her, watching over her like angels from a distance. The dogs again demanded their evening walk, and now it was cool enough, relatively speaking, for her to oblige. Choosing a slightly different route to the edge of the city, further upriver, she passed yet more new buildings as the city expanded still further. These houses and some shops were very tall buildings, still of Tuscan stone with red-tiled roofs, but with beautifully ornate doors and windows depicting the wealth of the soon-to-be occupants. The city was full of wealthy merchants, and many had chosen to live in these beautiful buildings, or even more expansive villas in this quieter and hopefully safer part of the city, away from its bustling heart. The area was still close enough to the river to make it an interesting and direct route to the water, as it snaked its way around the vibrant jewel of Tuscany. How she adored this place, and felt she had never wanted to leave it. She would like to travel to see some of the cities she had read about and heard about from the merchants, but she was not sure that she would want to live anywhere else but here. It was not only her ancestral, but her spiritual home. Somehow, another day had passed, and she wondered what had been achieved. As she said her nighttime prayers at her bedside, she gave thanks for the continuing safety of Michelangelo, who, despite his difficulties, had seemed in good spirits, at least during her visit. She was grateful for the continuing sanctuary of her home, for having sufficient food to eat and clean water to drink, and she was very thankful, as always, for the love, laughter and comfort brought by her two canine companions. She expressed gratitude for having met Antonio again and for the feelings that seeing him had stirred in her, though she was keeping those feelings to herself for now. While the dogs lay on guard downstairs, Francesca lay still for several minutes, contemplating once more on the intense dream she had had about drowning and what this might be telling her about her life. In some ways she felt alone, but strangely, not lonely. The thoughts of her subconscious mind took over to guide her to sleep, and she made sure, as ever, that her last thoughts, as were her waking thoughts, were of Michelangelo. Tomorrow she was sure that she had to do something more to ensure his safety. And she encouraged her mind to find solutions she needed as she drifted off, back into a deep and determined sleep. Chapter 21. After another tough day at the bank, Isabella was looking forward to her English language class that evening and for the chance to interact with the gorgeous David. She wondered when the best time would be to tell her colleagues, and especially her boss, Massimo, that she would be leaving. She would have to do it soon, as her new job at the Academy Galleria began in less than 2 months' time. She sensed that Massimo had a bit of a thing for her, so she was not sure how well he was going to take the news. She sincerely hoped that he would not make things difficult for her
in the remaining weeks. Isabella treated herself to a light salad on the way to Centro Linguistico di Ateneo of the Università degli Studi di Firenze, stopping at her favourite cafe for the refreshment and the inevitable people watching. She played the Where Are They From game with herself and reckoned that she saw 4 Danish couples, 3 Swedish couples, or could they have been Finnish, 3 absolute certs from the Czech Republic, plenty of sweaty Brits, and a few others who she couldn't quite place, but she had an idea that the loud ones were Russian, she was almost certain of it, but they were some distance away, and the quieter ones might have been Polish, but she didn't hear them speak, so it was only a guess. She settled quietly into her seat, and most people chose to sit in the same places, although there was no instruction to do so. David arrived a few minutes before the official start time on this occasion, not having been delayed by a hysterical woman in a restaurant, no doubt. Isabella wondered if he had been working at the spa again today, as she could smell the distinctive aroma of the juniper oil again, which she definitely found arousing. David's sister had accompanied him into the room, and she kissed him lightly on his cheek this time, telling him that she'd be back for him in a couple of hours. "Good evening, class. Is everybody here? Do we know? Can we please just do the register check?" commenced David. From the names David read out, she deduced that Mr. Grumpy, the waiter, was called Valerio. Piero and Amelia seemed to be engaged in a rather intimate conversation and nearly missed their names being called out. Gabriella next to her was very chatty too, and Isabella found it distracting as she wanted to concentrate on David, in more ways than one. "Okay, class, what I thought we would do tonight is focus on listening to and reading song lyrics as a great way to expose ourselves to English in context. I've chosen my favourite artist, but you can do this with any artist where you have access to their lyrics, simultaneously with the music, on Spotify, for example, or YouTube. Let's give it a try. I've given you a sheet with some words blanked out. Please see if you can capture the missing words from what you hear. You can sometimes make sense of the phrase from the context or the rhyme." The second the opening bars to the music commenced, Isabella knew that the universe was connecting her with David in a real and meaningful way. If this was really his favourite artist, she knew they already had a spiritual and serious connection. "When the rain is blowing in your, and the whole world is on your, I can offer you a warm to make you my love. When the evening and the appear, and there is no one there to dry your, I could hold you for, to make you feel my." "Oh, I love Adele," said Gabriella, the jewellery seller next to her as the music started. "It's not Adele," whispered Isabella, strongly through clenched teeth. "It's a Bob Dylan song. He wrote the lyrics. This is his song. This is his version." Isabella, of course, didn't need the music to be able to complete the exercise, so she just allowed the words and sound to melt into her. This song always moved her, and she sat in silence for the first few moments after David had stopped playing the track. As he went around the room, asking people what they had put in the gaps, he asked students to say their names as they responded. He was obviously getting an auditory clue as to who was who, and matching their voices with their names. Isabella had not said much to him during the massage, but she wondered whether he would make the connection. If he did, he didn't disclose it to her and embarrass her in front of her classmates. He seemed very gentlemanly and calm, confident and communicative, despite, or maybe because of, the fact that he couldn't see people and therefore make any preconceived judgments about them. Isabella's task was to share the word love at the end of the second verse. "That's right," said David. "Isabella, thank you." In his voice, there was a slight hesitancy that he might have recognised her from the night before, but he was too polite to show it. The session continued at a lively pace, with other artists being introduced. Not everybody really took the activity seriously, but Isabella enjoyed it, as she enjoyed all music. As the session came to a conclusion, Isabella was determined she was going to grab the chance to talk to David as they left. As the students began filing out one by one, she took the opportunity to manoeuvre herself across the front of the room to where David was shutting down the computer. "David," she said, "it's Isabella. We actually met last night. I went to the spa and you gave me a wonderful massage. Thank you for that. I felt really good when I got up this morning. Oh yes, I thought I recognised your voice, he said quietly. I trained as a masseur when I was at college. There was the time when they thought the only jobs blind people could do was to be a masseur or a piano tuner, which is where I got my love of music from, actually. David laughed as he said this. These things, he said, pointing at the computer, changed everything and created a level playing field for blind people, if the hardware and software are designed appropriately. Would you like to go for a drink, David? Said Isabella, knowing that she wanted to seize this opportunity to get to know him better. I know a really nice place just round the corner. That would be lovely, he said. Just let me phone my sister. She usually comes to collect me. I'll put her off for an hour or so. The pair moved to the stairway in the wide gallery outside. Isabella was careful to describe where things were as David held her elbow gently for her to guide him. Right, she said. There are stairs here, with a handrail on the right, so you have to be careful. That's fine, David said. But do the stairs go up or down? Yeah, that's a bit crucial information I missed out, isn't it? They go down, David. They go down. Chapter 22. Antonio called early in the morning for Francesca, eager to make the most of the journey to the countryside before the day's heat became too intense. Francesca was awake, of course, but she didn't want to give the dogs too much food before the long walk, just lots of water to keep them hydrated. She had forgotten just how handsome Antonio actually was, or maybe he had only become so handsome in the last few years away at university. He was an assured and confident young man, for one of such a young age, and she thought he would do very well in the business career he was determined to have for himself. He held both dogs on their long rope while Francesca cleared away the last of the items she had out in the kitchen as she prepared what she could for a picnic. We'll have to stop for some bread along the way. We don't want to be carrying that too far, do we, if we don't have to? She asked Antonio. That's a good idea. There are plenty of places to get something, and I have some coins with me, so don't worry, replied Antonio. With that, they set off, heading north away from the river towards Fiesole and the gentle hills there. If they were lucky, they might find a cart heading in that direction, but if not, they would just walk as far as they could until they had gone far enough to know they could make it back again in the cool of the evening. The city was still half asleep, and only a few dogs were disturbed when they heard or sensed Rosa and Luna sniffing at their gates or doorways. As they left the paved or cobbled areas of the city, the beautiful city, the roadways became dirt tracks, and indeed, just a couple of hours out of town, a cart was about to pass them, already carrying a couple of passengers, as well as milk and straw. May we ride with you for a while? Said Antonio as the farmer halted the donkey in its tracks. Yes, hop on the back, he said. I'm not going so far, but it will save your legs for later. Where are you heading for? Fiesole, or nearby, said Antonio. Thank you. So you'll need to rest for an hour or so, replied the farmer as they trundled along slowly, not much faster than the walking pace they already maintained with the dog's help. The dogs were very comfortable and cooler amongst the straw that was piled high on the cart itself. Antonio and Francesca sat with their legs swinging underneath the rear of the vehicle, sitting very close to each other, but deliberately not touching. They felt the excitement of two young children going on their first journey away from the village. The sun was beginning to rise high in the sky by the time they reached the farmer's turning, so they jumped down from the cart, the dogs leaping to join them without any encouragement. "Do you know the way?" asked the farmer politely. "Yes, I do. It's my grandfather's village," said Antonio. "I think it'll take us about another hour from here, if I remember correctly." "That's right," said the farmer. "Enjoy your day in the sunshine." The couple turned away down a grassy bank and along a narrow, winding path that snaked through several Tuscan hamlets along their route. They found shade from the cypress trees when they could, and they knew that this was where they would often find, a small stream to replenish their own water supplies or to allow the dogs to refresh themselves. They listened to the gentle humming of bees as they made their way along the route and heard the incessant twitching of the noisy crickets as they clipped their wings together in the bright yellow cornfields. One meadow had been left to go to pasture for the wandering cows, and Francesca stopped for several minutes just to take in the beautiful scenes of iridescent wildflowers shimmering across the fields, the colours bright and majestic, the smells almost overpowering. Antonio was fascinated by the architecture of the buildings they encountered along the way. Small villas, which were incredibly elaborate for their size, being a smaller scale version of those you might see inhabited by the wealthiest merchants in the heart of the city, or the newer buildings on the fringes of the city as it expanded. These were interspersed with very traditional stone dwellings, which looked nothing more than cowsheds, like the one Francesca's family had in their olive grove. Occasionally, little children would run out from behind a bush to try to surprise them, their tiny shadows often giving them away. Other villagers greeted them with a hearty wave as they strode purposefully towards their destination. "It's midday now, Francesca," said Antonio. "Shall we stop here and take our picnic?" "Yes, let's find a shady spot amongst those trees on top of that hill," said Francesca. They climbed a small incline and did as Francesca had suggested, finding some flat ground away from the hard tree roots and laying out a small blanket on which they put some wooden plates and the bread which they had purchased at the last village they passed through. They had fruit, cheeses, some prosciutto ham, and the fine, freshly baked bread they had just acquired, and water from a nearby stream. They hadn't spoken much during the journey. They were too focused on making sure the dogs were safe and well-behaved, and that they didn't get lost. Now, however, under the dense shade of the broad trees and the lilting gentle breeze, they had time to recuperate and relax. "Tell me about Bologna," asked Francesca. "Is it really as busy a city as people say?" "It's amazing, dear Francesca. There are so many opportunities for trade. Even though it does not have a port, it is an important trade route along the country, and of course, there is the university. It has a fascinating history, as you know, and it's regarded as the oldest university in the world, so we are very lucky to get the opportunity to study there," Antonio said proudly. "And what of your friendships in the city? Have you made many friends?" inquired Francesca. "I have indeed," said Antonio, "and I hope to maintain these associations to help me in my future career." "That's very good, Antonio. And what of women friends? Do you have some?" asked Francesca cheekily. "I do. There are women students at the university, which is quite exceptional. Many are very highly intelligent, especially in law and mathematics, indeed, in all the sciences." "And why wouldn't they be?" responded Francesca, rather forcibly. "No, I mean, it is unusual at some universities for women students to be allowed at all. In that way, it is a privilege, or at least unusual." "I don't doubt it," said Francesca, well aware that women faced an uphill struggle for equality in all fields of study and work. Their interaction quietened the mood a little between them, and Francesca felt the need to soften her attitude towards Antonio a little. However, she wanted to test out his opinion of Michelangelo, to see whether she could trust Antonio enough to ask him to help her free the master from the city. She felt she couldn't do it on her own. She began. "Dear Antonio, what do you think of Signor Buonarroti? Not of his work, but of his life as a man of integrity. Do you think it was foolish of him to support the Republic, for example?" "No, on the contrary, Francesca. I think he was very brave to stand out against the Medici family, especially as they had been his sponsors for much of his recent work," replied Antonio. "That's very interesting, Antonio. Would you say you were a supporter of his then?" "Oh yes, most certainly. He is very pious, a man of high honour and integrity. This has to be respected. He can be loud and vociferous at times, but that is his passion showing through." "Then may I share a secret with you? One that must not be shared with anyone else," said Francesca. "Of course, Francesca, you have my word. What is it?" "I know where Michelangelo is in hiding, but I need your help to rescue him and to bring him out here to the countryside," whispered Francesca to no one except Antonio and the trees. "How? I mean, where is he?" asked Antonio. "I can't tell you just yet, but if you swear to keep this a secret, I can take you to him on our return to the city." At this stage, Antonio would do anything to impress Francesca and to be supportive of her. He genuinely liked Michelangelo and do whatever it took to keep him safe. "I agree," said Antonio. "I will help you in any way I can," Chapter 23. The pair entered the doorway of the trattoria and asked if they could have a table outside. They were offered one away from the smoking area and took it gladly. David had on a very smart pair of cream chinos, which were perfect for the summer heat, and the elegant blue jacket she had seen him in before. He had a smart white collarless shirt on, which did away with the need for a tie. He had a pair of brown shoes on, which at first seemed strange, but actually they worked very well in combination with the rest of his outfit. He definitely had a sense of style. Isabella broke the ice to get the conversation going. "How long have you been in Florence, David?"
"Oh, just 3 months. My sister Gina, who you might have seen, invited me out here for the summer. She's lived here for a couple of years with her Italian husband. She's an interpreter, English to Italian and French as well. She focuses on commercial clients rather than individuals."
"Yes, I've seen her, David. She's got black hair, hasn't she?" She immediately questioned herself as to how David would know, or not, what colour her hair was.
"If you say so," he laughed. "She's my older sister, and when she was young, I knew she had blonde hair. I could see quite well until I was 5, and then this degenerative condition kicked in, and I was totally blind by the age of 8.
Isabella admired the clarity with which he described his condition. "I'm drawn to the work of Da Vinci, of course, but I really want to find out more about the life of Michelangelo Buonarroti. Something draws me to him. I feel a very close connection with many aspects of his life, not just here in Florence, but when he moved to Rome too."
"That's very cool. I love history too. I studied it as part of my degree at Oxford. It was sort of compulsory, even though I studied English literature and language," said David.
"What brought you into teaching?" asked Isabella.
"Well, it's the usual story, I'm afraid. I sort of drifted into it because no one wanted to employ a blind guy as a serious academic. So I needed to do something practical where I could earn some reasonable money. I've always had what you might call a portfolio career. A little bit here, a little bit there. I'll try anything once."
"I have a confession to make," said Isabella. "I've seen you at work in one of your other jobs."
"Oh, you mean the massage parlour? I mean the spa," said David.
"No, actually. My friend Mia and I were at the life drawing class the other morning at the PT Palace."
"We saw you there," said Isabella, rather hesitantly, not wishing to embarrass David.
"Oh, I see. Yes. Well, that's interesting. Did you like what you saw?" David said confidently, hoping to turn this to his advantage.
"Yes, indeed. You make a very good model. You have an excellent physique."
David was not afraid of or ashamed of his body.
"Yes, I like to keep in shape. I use the gym at the spa. I get a good discount. It's important to me."
"I can see that," said Isabella.
A few silent moments passed while they both took in the nature of their last interaction, which sounded a bit forward and provocative, but neither of them had shied away from it. The waiter took their order and they sipped on their drinks. Isabella could still smell the distinctive juniper oil scent on David's skin. Likewise, David was taking in Isabella's perfume, which was more of an essential oil, geranium, if he was not mistaken. He liked it. It suited her skin. He'd noticed it the other day, too.
"Tell me about the massage skills. Were you really taught that at college?" inquired Isabella.
"Yes, I did a short course after my degree while I was working out what I wanted to do, or what I could do. It was really useful and I enjoy it. I learnt lots of different techniques and I really enjoy the work," replied David.
"I can tell. You're very good at it, if you don't mind me saying. I need to come again."
"Book me any time. Have you got the app?" asked David.
"No, but my friend Mia has. It's a new place, isn't it?"
"Yes, Gina goes there, and she knew they were looking out for a masseur. I gave a few massages to the staff as part of their rather exaggerated interview process, and I got the job.
I think they just wanted a few free massages. Cheeky, I thought."
Isabella liked his sense of humour, as he spoke about things that could have been tricky or difficult, but he always seemed to find a way of working a situation out. She liked the positive vibes he gave out, and his acute sense of humour. Their food having arrived, they ate in relative silence compared to the chatty conversations they'd been having so far. David had learnt to avoid the messiness of spaghetti, for obvious reasons, and had gone for a simple lasagna with a nice green salad. It was getting late for Isabella to eat, so she again had just gone for a salad on its own.
As she sipped on her water, she looked at the way David again coped very well with his disability. You would not know he was blind unless it had been pointed out to you. No wonder it had taken her so long to realise. Just then, David's phone pinged in his jacket pocket. That will be Gina, he said. Of course, she wants to get home for her dogs. They live out on the edge of the city. It takes a while to get there at this time of the night. Oh, do you really have to go? Said Isabella, the disappointment obvious in her voice. 15 minutes she's given me. She has this function on Messenger where she tracks where I am. There's no getting away from her, no escape. I mean that in a good way. Florence is actually quite a difficult city to get around because the wide piazzas are very awkward for me. There are so many people who don't notice I'm blind, and I get bumped into a lot. Then the narrow streets are tricky to negotiate too, for similar reasons. Even with my navigation device on my phone, it's like sat-nav for blind people. You don't use a cane then? Asked Isabella. Not if I can help it, although if I'm out on my own, it's very necessary. But people don't like it when they get tapped on their shins. I get a lot of abuse. That's a pity, expressed Isabella. It was the first time that she had considered his impairment as interfering with his ability to function independently and do what he wanted to do. Let me pay, said David. I'll need to be going. Thank you, David, said Isabella, for whom the night had ended much too abruptly. Are you coming to Friday's class? Asked David. I plan to, yes, unless something comes up at work, replied Isabella. Then I'll see you then. Thank you for tonight. It's been very nice meeting you, or getting to know you better. Thank you, David. With that, David stood up and greeted his sister, before introducing her to Isabella. The two women looked at each other intently, as if they knew each other, but they couldn't quite place from where in the evening dark. Nice to meet you, Isabella, said Gina. Nice to meet you too, replied Isabella. With that, the brother and sister turned and walked away into the busy space of the piazza. Isabella sat for a moment and followed them as they walked, arm in arm, in the direction of home. Chapter 24. The pair ate slowly and silently, taking in the beauty of the surrounding fields and the hillside they had yet to climb in the near distance. The dogs lay stretched out under the dark shade of the broad-leaved trees, catching as much breeze as they could while it whispered through the canopy. Francesca kept glancing across at Antonio, whose poise matched that of the dogs in some way, except he was resting up on one elbow, his long legs stretching off the blanket into the stiff grass. Likewise, Antonio glimpsed across at Francesca when he thought it safe to do so, admiring the length of her body and her feminine shape as she sat upright, resting her back against the stiff bark of the tree. "Are you comfortable like that?" Francesca asked him. "If you mean to eat, you might prefer to sit up." "I'm fine, thank you. It's very beautiful here, don't you think?" said Antonio. "Of course. We are lucky to live so close to such outstanding nature." "Look, there's a rabbit." Francesca sat forward as the little rabbit stood still, sniffing the air to sense danger, before scurrying back down into the long grass and disappearing without a sound. In the distance, they could hear the gentle mooing of cows as they, too, sought some shelter from the intense midday sun. Somewhere nearby, there was a dog barking, or rather, two dogs having something of a conversation which was growing in intensity until a man shouted at them to be quiet. Little was said between the pair of humans, however, as they continued to pick at the fruit, ham and cheeses they had brought with them to accompany the fresh bread. "Francesca, do you know if Signor Buonarroti will agree to your plan to move him out here?" asked Antonio. "I'm not sure. If I'm not too tired when we get back to the city, I will visit him and ask. There are one or two other supporters who know where he is in hiding, and they go to care for him when I can't get there safely. I have been watched and followed." "And how could we ensure he would be safe out here?" continued Antonio. "I really don't know, but I just think he's in a very perilous position where he is. He could easily be discovered by accident. Even his loud snoring could give him away, or a cough or him sneezing. It's not safe there." Again, they selected silence and contemplation as they both considered the safest place for the master to be. far away from the Medicis seemed to be the sensible answer at the moment. Francesca, as you know, Fiesole is my grandfather's village. He has many outbuildings on his farm, and I'm sure that if I can bring my grandfather into our confidence, that Michelangelo would be safe there, at least for a short while, until we think of something more suitable. Do you think your grandfather would agree, Antonio? Asked Francesca, leaning forward to gauge Antonio's reaction through his body language, as well as his words. Of course, I wouldn't have suggested it otherwise. My grandfather is an admirer of Michelangelo's work. He helped transport the Pietà to Rome, if you remember. Michelangelo may remember my grandfather being involved in that epic journey. Such a responsibility. Yes, yes, now you mention it, I knew there was some connection with Fiesole. There were several men from the village involved, weren't there? Yes, I don't know why. I know that Michelangelo had visited the village several times, so he is obviously familiar with the area, confirmed Antonio. Then, let's call at your grandfather's to ask him. Do you think that will be appropriate? I'm sure it will, said Antonio, as the pair again settled down into reflective silence. Upon finishing their food, the pair gave the last of the bread to the dogs, who immediately devoured it, before they set off on the last leg of their journey. The light breeze had strengthened a little, and the gentle wind was now blowing Francesca's hair as it extended from her headscarf. Antonio led the dogs, or rather, they led him, down to a rippling stream for some much-needed water. Crossing to the other side, they climbed the hill into the village and were immediately greeted by a small crowd of 8 to 10 children who picked at Francesca's pockets, expecting some treats. But there were none to be had. The rustic buildings lining the main thoroughfare into the village created a unified scene. Beautiful Tuscan stone, small wooden windows, and strong red-tiled roofs. My grandfather's farm is on the far side of the village, higher up than the rest of the settlement. Do you want to wait here until I run to get him? Asked Antonio politely. No, I'll come with you if it's okay, replied Francesca. They carried on through the village, which was rapidly growing into a small town, since the last time Francesca had visited, at least 5 years ago. There was a small market, which had closed for the day, a neat square for public gatherings, and numerous small shops and shuttered dwellings. Many people were inside their homes, keeping away from the heat of the early afternoon sun, but a few people greeted the couple and whistled at the dogs as they passed by. Reaching his grandfather's farm, Antonio was met by at least 4 lively and loud dogs, who took a great interest in Luna and Rosa. Francesca held them close by her side. They were not yet familiar with other dogs, certainly not of this side and ferocity. Buon pomeriggio, mamma, Antonio shouted as his grandmother came out to see what all the noise and commotion was about. Antonio, Antonio, was all his grandmother could muster as she realised who it was. What a surprise! I'm sorry, I should have sent word to you, but I have come with my friend for a day's relaxation in the countryside, and as we were nearby, I obviously wanted to come to call on you. I hope you don't mind. Of course, where is your friend? Asked his grandmother, expecting to see a male companion come into view. She's here, Grandmama. Her name is Francesca, and here are her dogs, Luna and Rosa. Bella donna, remarked Antonio's grandmother, as Francesca emerged from behind a tree at the front of the property. My child, welcome to our home. Do you wish to have some food? We have some chicken and some soup, which I can prepare for you. No, no, Grandmama, just some water, please. We've just had a nice picnic together near the bottom of the hill. Is Grandpa in the fields? Asked Antonio. He's repairing a gate with Giuseppe somewhere over there, his grandmother said, pointing out across a large field to the rear of the farmhouse. I need to have a word with him. May I leave Francesca in your safe company, Grandmama? Asked Antonio. Of course, grandson. Francesca, my dear, please sit here at the table. I'll bring you some water. Francesca sat on a bench seat at the large rustic table that filled most of the small room. Its earthen floor was uneven, and the smell of animals had seeped into the very fabric of the building. There was a large open fireplace against one wall, on which the family obviously did their cooking. A mixture of domestic and farming implements adorned the walls proudly. Immediately next to where she was sitting, there was a large wooden chest, and on it a beautifully crafted framed embroidery in silk, with what looked like a poem inscribed on it. Francesca reached across to look more closely at the intricate handiwork. the words surrounded by a dreamlike Tuscan rural landscape, similar to that which they had travelled through for much of the morning. "Did you do this?" asked Francesca as she started to slowly read the piece, tears immediately welling up in her beautiful blue eyes. "No, it was a gift from a friend." "A dear old friend," said Antonio's grandmother, putting both hands up to her chest as if to protect her heart. In Italian, it read, "There is just one thing I would ever ask of you. Please, don't let me watch you fall in love with someone else. I will be happy for you, as your friend, of course I will, to see you love again. But let me go away in peace, to heal my broken heart, alone. Michelangelo Buonarroti."